Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
The Texans take the divisional matchup with the Jaguars and gear up for a race with the Colts for the division heading into the bye week. We're going to talk about all that and more on this edition of The Bullpen. Hello and welcome to The Bullpen. As always, I am James Roy, and with me is Tom Chavarria. Tom, how are you doing today?
I know you said we're gearing up for a race, but I can't see it as a race when you've got like a pretty decent lead on the second place guy. It's really, you know, I feel like they've lapped the Colts. Maybe I'm by myself in that. I know a lot of people are worried because of the schedule and stuff like that. We'll get into it, but Texans got a win. Very, very happy about that. Didn't love how it went down, but you know, you need to get these wins. No one is complaining in Kansas City that the Chiefs are winning ugly right now. No one. And if they are, it's just because they need something to complain about. So I kind of have to feel that way a little bit too. Like, ugly wins are wins too, and you need those to get to where you need to go.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel like through the flow of this game, One, C.J. Stroud did not turn the ball over. The Texans' offense did not turn the ball over. So, huge positive. This is kind of what I was talking about last time when I talked about like what I thought the Titans game would kind of look like in terms of it being a positive win that feels good but doesn't, you know, but you can like write it off as a divisional thing. So, for me, what it is that the Texans were up 23-6 going in towards the end of the game. Some mishaps defensively, like, you know, say Brian Thomas Jr. being covered by a linebacker late in the game. Don't know how you let that happen. Let that game get a little closer than it should have been. And it kind of highlighted the second half Texans offense, but the second half Texans offense was there. They showed up, they put up 14 points on the board in the second half. They looked bad in the first half, but if there's a half I'd rather them look bad in, it's probably the first half. A strong showing in the second half by the Texans makes me feel a lot better about this game than I thought I would based on the score. But we'll get deeper into it as we talk more about it. Let's talk about CJ first. So CJ, I'm going to say this. CJ Stroud threw for about 240 yards and a touchdown. Mac Jones threw for about 240 yards and two touchdowns. And Mac Jones did not play for a lot of the game. I'm not, do with that information what you will. I've said it the past couple weeks with CJ Stroud until he gets past this like mental block that he has going on due to the offensive line play and general issues he's had to deal with this offense, some of which have come from him. I'm not going to deny that. But with what he's had to deal with, a good game for CJ Stroud is not turning the ball over. So I'm not mad that he had a worse game than Mac Jones, because at the end of the day, he had a better game than Mac Jones on the, you know, stat that mattered, which was winning. So, but what do you make of that? Just that's what I'm going to give to you is that comparison.
So I don't know that I ever want to feel great about what you just said. Like, well, he didn't play better than Mac Jones, but he won. Like that's not good. Like in no sense of the word is that, hey, this is great. You know, he's a winning quarterback. No, CJ probably should have thrown for 350 yards and two or three scores. That's what probably should have happened. CJ is missing throws that, you know, are taking points off the board. CJ is not playing his best football. He would tell you that. And for the Texans to find a way to win, even though your quarterback is not playing at an elite level, which in this league you really need, you've seen it from different quarterbacks, different teams, different scenarios. Take Buffalo, for example, who just won their division. The Texans embarrassed Buffalo, had Josh Allen looking very, very, very poor by his standards. They've went on a run since then. And nobody wants to talk about the fact that the Texans beat Buffalo. Doesn't matter because, you know, they're
the last team to beat Buffalo, if I remember correctly. Exactly. No one has beaten them since that.
You look at a team like Miami, a team that the Texans are gearing up to play in 2 weeks. And when they didn't have Tua Tagovailoa, they could not move the football. Didn't matter how many weapons they had. Didn't matter what backup quarterback they put in there. They were inept offensively. So Tua's back. They're a little bit better, but they still struggle. Green Bay beat them pretty thoroughly, 30-17. It was never close. And, you know, Green Bay and Houston played to within a field goal of each other. Houston had the lead with 2 minutes left. So, you know, when you look at things like that, quarterback play matters. It, in this league, J.J. Watt said it best. If you got a quarterback, you got a shot. Now, I believe CJ is that guy, no question. I think everybody in Houston believes that. Do I think he's playing to that level right now? Absolutely not. And when you see this team struggle mightily offensively, first half, second half, whatever, a lot of it for me this last month has been the quarterback play. Now, I think some of that was some demons from having poor offensive line play. But in this game, we just saw the offensive line was rock solid. Like, he had plenty of time to throw. He had plenty of time to make. I mean, there were coverage sacks. There was one sack in the very beginning of the game where it was just a misassignment by Jared Patterson. But other than that, all game long, pretty clean football. No Laremy Tunsil penalties. Like, there wasn't a whole lot to complain about. Scruggs didn't have any penalties. Like, if this team doesn't score against one of the poorest defenses in the league, 26 run defense in the league, it's on the Texans. And for me, it's on CJ Stroud.
Yeah, I see your point there. And I tweeted right after that if I could sum up the Texans' offensive issues in one word, that my word would be discipline. And you are right that in the Jaguars game specifically, there was less discipline issues. It was a positive progression. And that's why at the beginning of the episode, I said, like, I'm not disappointed in this win. Like, you're not going to hear me. If I have any negative points to make, you'll hear a couple because that's just, I guess, who I am. I like to think I'm optimistic, but Tom, you've kind of brought out the pessimist in me in a way. No, I know I've brought out the pessimist. It turns out what I found is that the better the Texans are, the more critical I am of them. And that's pessimistic in a lot of people's eyes. Whereas when they're bad, I'm trying to find every reason to be happy to watch the Texans because otherwise I'll just stop watching. And obviously I've been a fan for, you know, the whole 20 plus years that they've been around. So I've found the silver lining every time. And there's been some pretty dark moments. But with CJ, I mean, I agree with your points. I mean, I think that in general, at some point you have to look at the quarterback play because in the game of football, in the modern era, quarterback play is what drives offenses. You can blame the O-line, you can blame the play calling, but at some point, every quarterback has had to overcome something to be great. Now, obviously, quarterbacks like Tom Brady. Tom Brady has benefited from great O-line play for most of his career. So he didn't really have to deal with that. And he also had, you know, some pretty solid offensive play calling. But like a lot of great quarterbacks at times still have to overcome that, even though you could say generally the play has been good. There's been plays that they've had to make. And last year it felt like CJ was ready to step up in those moments pretty consistently. And this year it hasn't quite felt the same. I chalk it up to, I don't like saying the term, but I mean, I chalk it up to a sophomore slump. I mean, I don't know if that's what we're going to do. Because I'm not like at a point with CJ where I'm like, oh, he's messing up. He's not playing his best ball. This is not the guy I thought he was. Like, I know somewhere in there is CJ Stroud, you know, squabbling, doing whatever it is he does on the field, you know, like, I don't know. I'm not very good at doing the CJ Stroud sellies, but
For all the audio only people.
Trying. He's out here listening. You're probably better off listening and not seeing what's going on the camera. But I still have confidence that CJ is the franchise guy. And I have confidence that over time, any issues he's having can be corrected. Nothing he's done has led me to believe that, I mean, if anything, if I'm making a comparison for what CJ is going through right now, my comparison is Josh Allen in terms of like the forcing plays, trying to missing throws that he should be hitting, trying to play hero ball is like a Josh Allen to a T. And Josh Allen has obviously figured that out to some extent right now. I mean, he's a front runner for MVP. And I think CJ is a far more refined prospect coming out of college than Josh Allen was. So if the offensive staff for the Texans can't figure out what's going on with CJ, then they should all be fired. I mean, that in and of itself is reason to fire them this offseason or the next. But we've heard enough talk about the firing of the Texans offensive staff. Let's talk about Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, first player in NFL history to get 100+ rushing yards and at least a rushing touchdown games on the road to start a season in a row. What do you make of his performance against Jacksonville and how important he's just been to the team this whole season?
Well, say what you want about Nick Cassero's ability to get enough talent in here to fill out this roster from the offensive line, the secondary, the linebackers, wherever you want to make your cases for where Nick failed you in, you know, the draft and in the offseason, where he did not miss, absolutely did not miss, was with Joe Mixon. That's probably going to go down as one of those trades if the Texans get to where they want to go and eventually they hoist a trophy and Joe Mixon's a part of it, as one of the most lopsided trades in Texans history, because they got this guy who is probably one of the top five running backs in all of football right now for a 7th round pick. And you just don't see that. Cincinnati basically said, here, take this guy off our hands. We don't want him. And we'll take a bag of footballs, because a 7th round pick is literally a lottery ticket. And all Joe Mixon has done has balled out every game that he's been a part of. His energy is electric. The team feeds off of him. And this was a game that I honestly expected more from him, but I thought the offense was trying to do some different things. I thought they were trying to get CJ going early so they didn't run the ball as much. Jacksonville's the 26th ranked rushing defense in the league. They're not good. And I think the Texans should have been able to run the football all day long if they wanted to. They got into some obvious situations where they ran the ball, and I think Jacksonville exploited that a little bit. But once they got back to, you know, just lining up and going, I think you really saw Joe Mixon take over in the second half, and you saw the touchdowns as a part of it.
It felt like early on the run game kind of got stymied. And before I give my take on that, I mean, I think it'll be lost in history, the context of that trade, but it's really, I think, important to note that while the Bengals look like the losers of that trade, I mean, they are losers because they wanted to release Joe Mixon, but I think the losers were any team that needed a running back that did not come away with a good running back in that offseason, that didn't pony up a 7th round pick to get Joe Mixon, is a clear and apparent loser, because that is really who passed up on the opportunity to have him. Otherwise, it would have been a bidding war in free agency. I think he had the market. There was fans that doubted his potential, just like Derrick Henry, because of like age concerns, I guess. But like, there was never a doubt, I think, in NFL circles that Joe Mixon was going to have that market. And the Texans saw that and did the right thing and gave up the 7th round pick to get him there. And I think that's the reason why a lot of people critique, you know, these trades that Nick Cassero does, where like he sends a bunch of defensive linemen to the 49ers for like 6th and 7th round picks. And it's like, and who, you never know what that 7th round pick is going to become. Some veteran at a position we need could be on the chopping block, and we'll send a 7th round pick to lock him up, and they'll be the next great thing in the Houston Texans uniform. So I think it's important to note that. As far as Joe Mixon's performance goes, it feels good. Like, it was a good performance. I don't want to be negative about it because I don't think it was negative, but like, I agree with you that it could have been better, based off of who the Texans were playing, the run defense there. That's what I expected it to be better going into that matchup. And that's why maybe some people didn't think it was bad early on, but like early on in that game, I was like, man, we were really handing the ball to Mixon and he's getting stopped. He's getting stomped at the line. It took a minute for it to kind of catch on before he broke a couple big runs. And it was really some big runs late in the game that saved his numbers, if you will. Because if you look at the early points in the game, I don't know if he was averaging more than 2 yards a carry at one point. But I mean, obviously he salvaged it and the Texans won. So nothing to be mad about there. Just interesting to see the Texans run game not really take off. And I think it brings up a point that I've been meaning to talk to you about this on the show, and I guess now is a better time than never. Kenyon Green really benefited the run game when he was playing left guard, is a point that's been made online. Do you think the Texans are missing Kenyon Green in that regard, relative to Juice Scruggs? What are your thoughts on the run game with the way the offensive line is shuffled this season?
To be honest, it's a really tough question to answer because you talk about different varying levels of talent on the other side of the football, right? So Kenyon Green had to deal with some really good defense, had to deal with some really elite run-stuffing guys, that sort of thing. And I think, you know, he also had to deal with just being young, you know, for as much as Kenyon Green was hyped and he came out of college, he was still incredibly young. He was injured the first couple seasons. So I think there was still a learning curve that he was still trying to get past. He was billed as a run blocking guy out of college. So I think that was like always to his strength, right? Kept it simple. Okay, I know I need to get to this point where I'm at. I don't have to wait and pass block. Pass blocking is an art, I feel like, or run blocking is kind of like, look, I've got one job and that's it. And this to open that hole, pull this way, push that way. And that's it. I don't have to worry about anything else. I'm not worried about who's coming through this, this gap or whatever. I know that my running back is going this way. So to that, I think Kenyon Green was to a lot of people, myself included, the best run blocking guy on the line. Now, the opponent has changed, and you know you've seen the Texans exploit some bad run defenses. You've seen the Texans struggle against some good run defenses. Tennessee absolutely shut the run game down. And would Kenyon Green have helped? I don't know. I know there's a large contingency that is glad that Kenyon Green's no longer around because they feel like he was the linchpin in what was a bad offensive line. And I would counter that the same to be said about the other teams they played. They weren't good pass rushing teams, so they don't get to the quarterback. So yeah, they're going to make Juice Scruggs and Jarrett Patterson look a little bit better than Kenyon Green. It's one of those things I know Nick Caserio has to address in the offseason if this team wants to be great. That the offensive line has got to be better, whether it's Shaq Mason, Jarrett Patterson, Juice Scruggs, one of the tackles, whatever they want to do, they have to make moves to protect CJ Stroud because they have everything else they need to be a great offense.
I think we could see something similar to what the Chiefs did. I believe it was in 2021. Once they realized what they had in Patrick Mahomes and how bad their offensive line was, they really made an effort to overhaul it. And while, I mean, the Chiefs offensive line isn't like the gold standard by any means, but like they're good. They've made drastic improvements through that process, and I think it's something many a GM has probably undertaken but not quite had as much success as the Chiefs have in terms of shuffling offensive linemen and getting to a better level of play that's more manageable to protect what could be one of the best quarterbacks ever play the game. So if the Texans are serious about CJ Stroud, I would suspect there's a move of similar caliber on the way. The only player I can think of that's on that offensive line, whether you agree with this or not, I mean, it's probably true, but the only player I can think of on the offensive line that's safe is probably Laremy Tunsil and maybe Jarrett Patterson, because he's played. You don't move from a piece like Jarrett Patterson with what he's shown. He's not like an all-star level offensive lineman, but it's like when you're making those decisions as a GM, you can't just scrap four offensive linemen and bring in four new starters and be like, okay, cool, we're going to run it like this. Maybe you could. Maybe that's what Caserio does. But if I'm looking at that offensive line, the only piece that's truly safe is Laremy Tunsil. And even then, his value maybe makes him a piece that could be moved in the offseason. The only thing that makes me hesitant to say that is his locker room presence. The players keep voting him as a team captain, which could be speak really highly of Laremy Tunsil or really poorly of the players. I don't know. So with that, his locker room presence may make him untouchable, on top of the fact that he's also one of the best left tackles in the game skill-wise. So I wouldn't be surprised. But to speak to Kenyon Green, I don't miss Kenyon Green. I wouldn't say I'm quite as far into the camp of like he is the sole reason this offensive line sucks. I think anyone who has observed this offensive line, even if they thought that initially over these past couple of games, can probably have the clarity of hindsight and look and go, oh, maybe there was a little more to it than Kenyon Green. A great run blocker early on in the season. I wouldn't say that he was a great enough run blocker to overcome. You could put him out there for running downs and then rush him off the field for a better pass blocking guard, but that's like a tell. Then you're like Lance McCullers in that one playoff game, just telling him you're tipping your pitches, and all of a sudden the defense just knows exactly what you're going to do. Did you hear 1 minute? So
that's a horrible this is reference, not text- though, because they still couldn't hit it. Hit your 24 straight curveballs and they still couldn't hit him.
Well, yeah. No, I'm talking about a different game. This was the Astros lost, not that one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So this is kind of relevant because the Texas and Texas A&M just played.
Welcome.
But I just thought of it because of what I was saying, so I'm going to say it now. I saw a video where someone said that the rivalry between Texas and Texas A&M is so deep that the coaching, when Tannehill was playing for A&M back right before the rivalry kind of came to an end, they received an email from like a booster or a fan that said that if Tannehill was like on his toes, then it was a run play. And if he was like sitting back, then it was a pass play. And they literally, like Emmanuel Acho is the one who was in the video. He literally said they incorporated that. And they had defensive linemen on the Texas defense just watching Tannehill and the way he stood in the backfield to get the jump on the play to see what was going to happen. So stranger things have happened, but that's why I'm not for this whole, like, the benefit of Kenyon Green being on the field at run blocking, sure. Is it worth the liability that he was as a pass blocker? No, absolutely not. So there's my unrelated story to kind of tie in my point there. Thank you for listening to me say that.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Well, since you brought up the UT A&M game, something I tweeted out and something I'm a huge fan of, the Texans absolutely need to go poach a couple of those guys off that line. That offensive line for
UT. I would
love
to see them use high draft capital on that offensive line.
What was 100%. Phenomenal, and Quinn Ewers had all the time in the world. They ran for a bajillion yards.
I'm wondering when number 65 Majors. I'm wondering when he leaves for the NFL because he's been a staple on that offensive line. It feels like he's been there forever. but I that was a guy who's performed pretty well. I'd be interested to see if they can snag some of those guys. I know that Caserio usually shows up to Texas A&M and UH games, so he's probably there. They were probably scouting that. He probably is pretty intimately familiar with the Texas offensive line if he knows what's good for this Texans team. But I saw you tweet that and I was like, man, that's the perfect tweet. I was like kind of thinking it. And then I looked at my phone and I was like, oh, Tom just mentioned me in his tweet. Oh, it's like we're connected somehow. That thought was formulating in my brain and it had already fully formed in your brain because you're older and wiser than me. So you obviously had the benefit of wisdom to get that thought out a little sooner. And I thank you for that.
To finish on the offensive line on my end, I thought it was interesting that you said that Jarrett Patterson was more untouchable than Titus Howard. And Titus Howard has already been committed to. I think Jarrett Patterson has the potential to be really good. I think that they should definitely keep Jarrett Patterson in this line, whatever they choose to do. But for me, there's no way that Jarrett Patterson instantly over the last, like, I don't know, three games or whatever, becomes more indispensable than Titus Howard when they've already committed so much money to him. And it's not as easy to go out and find a right tackle. So I imagine the move is center, guard, and you go from there and see what you can do to kind of shore that up. But I think Jarrett Patterson should definitely have a place on this line as a swing guy, as a starting guy, whatever the case may be.
I don't necessarily think the Texans move on from Titus Howard, but if I'm looking at that offensive line and I'm looking for areas to make improvement, skill-wise, I don't know. There's been like, I don't even want to say one too many times because it's been like a billion too many times where the play starts and Titus Howard is just getting blown off the line of scrimmage. Like it's bad. And he's had good stretches in games. I hesitate to say he's had a good game this season. So that's why, like, just eye test, just watching CJ Stroud drop back to pass, I have an internal ticker in my head of who is sitting in CJ's lap at the end of the play. And it's Juice Scruggs, Titus Howard, Shaq Mason, Kenyon Green. They're all names that have consistently let guys get to CJ a lot easier than they should for what they're being paid or what's invested in them, whether it's draft capital or, you know, monetary capital for them to be doing their job. So that for me, say what you will about Laramie Tunsil, right? We can talk about discipline. It's been a theme that I've brought up, and Laramie Tunsil is the poster child in a lot of people's eyes for the lack of discipline on this team in terms of penalties, and in terms of just his ability to stay where I don't know, like really just penalties. And so with that in mind, as a skilled left tackle, he is capable of being a top five left tackle in the league. The only knock on him is discipline. And so with as much as the Texans have invested in him, and with that, you can either view him as a huge trade piece to move to a different team, selling the fact that, hey, he gets a couple false starts, but your quarterback's not going to be pressured by anyone coming off that side. I can name TJ Watt, Myles Garrett. I can name a number of elite pass rushers that have never touched CJ Stroud with Laramie Tunsil playing ball. So I as frustrated as anyone with the penalties, but I also can appreciate that Laramie Tunsil is good at his job. So I that's sort of a take or give. It depends on how the Texans feel about that at the end of the season. But with Titus Howard, not only I don't think he gets penalties at the same rate. I don't think he's undisciplined in that way. I just think there's an effort problem. I don't think he's unskilled at right tackle. I think that when he has a good rep, he has a good rep. But it just feels like sometimes he kind of goes, okay, well, this is my playoff, and he kicks back and like doesn't really do what he is supposed to. And it's been super detrimental to CJ Stroud's development. So that's why I don't view... I think Jarrett Patterson has done a better job, and he's young. He's got a lot to prove. He needs to do a lot to prove that he deserves to stay on that offensive line past this season. He's there out of necessity right now, but so far, Jarrett Patterson has put in the effort in my eyes. I haven't seen him as the problem for this Texans offensive line in the short time that he's been playing, and that includes last season. Last season when Jarrett Patterson stepped up, he had one really bad game. And outside of that, the other three or four games he played, he was really good. So if that's his trend, if he plays three or four really good games and then has a really bad game, I'd take that over what we've been getting from this interior offensive line. If we could get better than that, yeah, sure, do it. But I mean, so that's why I would put Jarrett Patterson over Titus Howard in terms of like a potential to be kept on this Texans offensive line. If I was in charge, and we've emphasized this before on the show, you and me are not NFL GMs, never run a team, not sure. Caserio could have an entirely different thought process on this matter. And if he did really not like Titus or want to move on from this entire offensive line, he would never let us know until it happened. So, but with that, I would like to talk about the defense. And really, there's only one thing that I really want to talk about. I feel like we could spend another 20 minutes talking about this topic. We'll see how we do, but we're already like 30 minutes deep, I want to say. Aziz Al-Shaair. I really buried the lead here, guys. I knew that people would want to listen to this episode to hear us talk about it, so I waited until right now to bring it up. So you're welcome for 30 minutes of filler content so that you could get to this. I don't even need to explain. You know what happened. I just want your take. Aziz Al-Shaair hits Trevor Lawrence. Go. What do you got? I want to hear your take on it.
I think it was a penalty. I think he was probably a hair late. I think the ejection was probably warranted. I think the fine will probably be warranted. I don't believe he should be suspended. I believe that is a football play that happens. If you want to protect the quarterbacks, if you want to protect Trevor Lawrence and guys like him, then they need to get down sooner. You can see in the replays, because everybody wants to slow this down to a millisecond, to like the frame that works for them. And I can't stress how much that happens in a second. And that happens in 3 feet. Like the hit from when it happens, when Aziz takes off and when Trevor starts his slide is literally 1 yard. When he actually starts his slide, not this junk where you see him kind of like, you know, posture, but naturally. Go ahead.
There was a fan online that calculated it. They did the math. They watched the thing on repeat. There's about 300 milliseconds that Aziz Al-Shaair had to make that decision.
And for me, knowing that or knowing that it's that tight, I can't fault Aziz as much as the national media wants to. Ryan Clark, you got to go somewhere with that, bro, because you got clips upon clips upon clips of you making similar hits. And you
Ryan Clark said something about it?
Oh,
That's crazy.
He was like...
And he said something that wasn't in support of Al-Shaair?
At all. It was like, totally support the ejection. There's no room for that in the league. Da 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 da.
I mean, people change, but like Ryan Clark, seriously? That's like my informative years are him like wrecking people, killing defenseless receivers all over the field. And he's going to talk about it? Oh my gosh. I got to go look up that clip.
And then I did a post game with Robert Land. Go check him out. Houston Sports Talk. Good stuff. But, you know, I genuinely felt like he didn't understand that what else was Aziz supposed to do? You know, he's like, well, he led with the forearm. I'm like, okay, well, he can't lead with the helmet. If I'm going to tackle the guy, what am I going to tackle him with? Hopes and dreams.
I have so much to say on that. Oh my God.
And it's like, well, all you had to do was make sure he got down. I said, do you realize there are so many quarterbacks in this league that take advantage of that? And okay, I'm going to make you tackle me. Josh Allen runs over people left and right.
Pat Mahomes did it literally the other day. He literally fake slid 5 yards into a run, got another 10 yards after it. We're not talking about 1 or 2 yards. We're talking about the difference between a first down and a punt. Game-changing play is happening because quarterbacks are abusing the rule.
And speaking to that, this play happened at the yard marker. Like, this was for a first down. So
when he initiated his slide, it would have been third and two. They spotted it third and one. They're not even spotting it correctly. So, because there was offsetting penalties, so they spotted it where the play ended.
So Aziz is trying to protect the yard marker to gain. He's trying to prevent a first down. And he, in 300ths of a millisecond or whatever that time is, he's got to discern, is he going to slide? Is he not? Because you can absolutely see Trevor Lawrence see him. They have camera where you see him trying to gauge when he can slide and how far he can take it. Now, if Trevor Lawrence gets down 2 yards sooner, we're probably not talking about it. But the fact that he waited till the very last moment to do it, I understand. You don't want anybody injured. You don't want anybody to get hurt. But if the quarterback's not going to protect himself, you should not punish the defensive player for playing as to the line as he can, because they're already taking so much from the defense already. This league is already geared towards point scoring. It's already geared towards offense. You know, there's so many rules in place to limit what the defender can do and how they can play. So now you're giving them this much more when you allow the quarterback to abuse this rule. And that's the way I look at it. And it's not a popular take. Nobody likes it. A lot of people just feel Aziz is a dirty player. This was him trying to hurt somebody. He had had other plays in other games, and they're making cases against this man. And it's like, look, was it a tough play for everyone? Trevor Lawrence, everyone? Yes. D'Amico doesn't want to speak to it. It's just not good. It's never going to be a good look. Do I feel like it's as egregious as a lot of people make it out? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I felt like it was overplayed. So for context, last year in MetLife, when Quinnen Williams shoved CJ to the ground in the backfield, I tweeted out a video of the play, and I put in all caps, "Eject Quinnen Williams from the league." I have overreacted in fandom, and I can imagine if it was CJ, I'd probably be really frustrated with the hit. But I'm going to put the but there. I'm going to talk about a few things. So first, D'Amico, immediately after the game, says that's not how what we coach to, and kind of talks to how that's not what he expected. With the context of a day, with time to think about it, he then steps up and does what you would expect any coach to do. But I mean, I appreciate D'Amico for it. He took Aziz Alshire's side and kind of called out Jacksonville for maybe, and the rest of the NFL maybe, for overreacting a little bit to it. And I think that was the right move. I think it shows that in the moment he understood the severity of it, and then after having time to think about it and assess, he has decided that he doesn't feel bad about supporting his player, because I can, as a linebacker himself, that he probably has been on the wrong end of that before and can feel for where Aziz is coming from. Now, to speak to the hit, like I said earlier, if you watch the replay, where the slide was initiated was with 2 yards to go. They spotted the ball 3rd and 1. We can only assume, based off where the ref spotted it, that that's where they viewed the slide as being initiated. If that's the case, that is easily a lot less time that Aziz Alshire has to react to, based off how the NFL views the play. So we're, as fans, seeing Trevor kind of go back to slide and calling that the start of the slide, and we can probably give another half a second before the NFL even decided that Trevor had decided to initiate a slide. Obviously, we talked about around the league. So when I say this, I don't mean it to this play. I think that Trevor, in general, could he have slid earlier? Sure. I don't think he slid as incredibly late as some people are saying he did. And I think that it's just a poor timing play. But there are quarterbacks that take advantage of it. Then I want to say, I'm going to say this and then continue with my point. Maybe we can talk about it later. I saw someone make a point on Kurt Warner asked how you fix this. And Zepp, he's been on the show. Mike, he does Mike's Book Reviews. Used to be deep in the Texans podcast scene. But he said his solution, and I thought it was really good. He said no one was going to like it, and I agree. But any player that crosses the line of scrimmage with the intent to carry the football should be a runner. They should not be treated differently just because they're – I know we want to protect quarterbacks because this is a passing-driven league, and you don't want to see plays like this where Trevor Lawrence goes out for a game or two. Probably based on how his hand went after the hit, he'd probably be out for at least 2 games. You don't want to see that, but at the same time, the only way to make these quarterbacks respect defenders is to tell, hey, when you cross the line of scrimmage, I can't help you, man. I'll call roughing the passer the second you're touched after throwing the ball. But if you leave the backfield, all the protections are off. And I say that knowing that CJ could be on the wrong side of that. And I agree with that. I think that's how it should be. I think that's the fix. And the NFL will never do it. So we'll always be having these conversations. But to speak to the hit from Aziz, one thing you also have to look at is that Aziz initiates the hit. People are looking at when Aziz lunges towards Trevor Lawrence, but if you've ever played football, you understand that the tackle process starts before that. He has squared up Trevor Lawrence well before that, and has loaded himself well before that happened. So this whole, we can talk about a number of things when the slide was initiated and all that. One thing is for certain, Azeez Al-Shaair was not changing his direction all of the sudden. He had gone through too many steps of the tackle to stop that. I agree with Tom. This is a flag. It is 100% a flag. But I think that Azeez did a lot of things in this tackle that helped Trevor Lawrence out. I would call Trevor Lawrence's season over if Azeez had squared up this tackle the way he intended to. And Azeez was aiming at a player that had not slid yet. So imagine this. He is square. He's lowering his center of gravity. You're taught to tackle. Get low. That's how you get your wrap up and you take this guy down. And so he's gotten as low as he thinks he needs to make this tackle. And then all of a sudden, Trevor Lawrence is 3 feet lower. So people are like, well, he threw his forearm. Yeah, he threw his forearm. What was he supposed to do? Leap with his helmet? That was what was going to hit Trevor Lawrence's helmet. And you know what? I'll take a forearm to the head and let my head bounce off the back of the ground before I take a helmet to the head at full force, let my head bounce off the back of the ground. So I think the hit was not good. It wasn't like something that I am going to laud Azeez for. It was definitely a penalty. But do I think that he did everything in his power to prevent? He did everything he could to make that hit as clean as it could have been in my eyes. I don't think there was anything he could have done better. Now, do I think he gets suspended? He's going to get fined. It has already been reported by Adam Schefter that he's likely getting suspended. And I don't think he's getting suspended for this hit. I think he's getting suspended for the culmination of all these events that people are bringing up to say he's a dirty player. So Azeez Al-Shaair punches Roshon Johnson in frustration when he's on the sideline. Actually, got that on the shirt right now, ironically enough. But a shout out to Houston Stressons for sending Tom and I these shirts. Tom's not wearing his. I probably should have told you I was wearing mine, but.
Yeah, he didn't even warn me. Like, thanks. I would have threw it on.
I probably should have told you. But, I mean, I think it's a culmination of events. He was not suspended for that. There was a couple of other things, minor things that no one really talked about until after this happened. So I think he'll face at least a one-game suspension, and it will be for the culmination of events. It's not specifically for the hit on Trevor Lawrence. And then. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I've pretty adequately articulated where I'm at on that. Do you have anything to say to what I said, Tom?
Well, I love what Zeb said. I love the idea that if you're going to leave the line of scrimmage, you become a runner. And let me be clear. If Trevor Lawrence had protected himself the way Trevor Lawrence could, and you've got tape of him doing it, the slide hurt him more because it opened him up to be tackled that way than anything else. It makes him a defensive
player.
And for everyone that has an issue with how Azeez approached the tackle, this happened a foot off the ground, and the forearm that Azeez hits Trevor Lawrence with hits him in the chest. And it's like, that's what gets the rock back to get the head to slam on the ground. Like, there's literally nothing wrong with the fact that Azeez hit him other than the way his body hits the turf because of the slide. And again, if you're gonna have guys like Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson take advantage of this same play and make defenses kind of like, you know, I don't know what to do, there's gonna be other sides of it. Now, this is what you would hope the league would step in and say, look, I have to do something to help this defense, these defensive players, because if not, we're going to keep seeing it, or we're just going to let quarterbacks run crazy. And I don't think anybody wants that either. I think they want the defense to have a shot to stop guys from just running all over the place. Otherwise, you might as well play flag football.
Yeah, and J.J. Watt has said as much. And one last thing to say, which is that the reason I referenced the Quinn and Williams hit on C.J. that concussed him is that was a clean hit. And I think that the Azeez Al-Shaair hit was a penalty. Do I think that those events isolated, right? Do I think that Azeez Al-Shaair should be suspended for that penalty? No. Do I think he'll be suspended because of a culmination of events? Yes. Now, is that hit the same as the Quinn and Williams hit? Absolutely not. Quinn and Williams got through the line, pushed CJ back, and it was just unfortunate the way that CJ's head snapped back and hit the ground, which is the same thing that happened to Trevor Lawrence. The only difference is that this was an illegal hit because of the way that the NFL has set up quarterbacks over the past. Like, and that's the thing too, is that like, this isn't just like a, The NFL, in an effort to protect quarterbacks, has made it harder to play defense and has put quarterbacks more at risk because the position they've asked quarterbacks to go into, if a defender has loaded up to make a tackle, they're not going to avoid that quarterback, and that quarterback is going to get hit worse than he would have. Like, you could compare it to Anthony Richardson. Anthony Richardson will run up, and he's not going to slide. He's going to run up, and he's going to take you head on. Now, does he injure his shoulder quite a bit? Yeah, sure. Quarterbacks will probably stop doing what Anthony Richardson does after a while once they dole out a few hits like that. Not all quarterbacks that run are built to dole out hits like Anthony Richardson does. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the whole thing could be solved. Literally, like, people think that quarterbacks are going to get hurt because their defenders are going to be headhunting them. And it's like, no, quarterbacks are just going to be maybe running less or maybe trying to find the sideline or diving for the dirt. I don't know. And one thing to look at is Brock Purdy. Kurt Benkert, I think, brought up a good point. He is the prime example for timing your slide, knowing when to dive versus slide, because sometimes a dive is a little safer than a slide, and all that. But you can look that up on your own time. Do you have anything more to say about this game before we kind of bring this thing to a close?
I think that whole incident overshadowed the whole game.
We didn't even talk about any other part of the defense. We just talked about that.
Yeah, the defense, I thought, played, you know, fairly well the first half. I think the second half they spent more time on the field, and especially towards the end of the game, where I think the offense kind of sputtered. You just felt like the defense, and then you saw Jacksonville go up tempo. So I think that really got the defense in a bind. I would have liked to have seen D'Amico take some time, you know, just to give those guys a break. And that didn't really happen. After Aziz went out, you got Neville Hewitt in. So I think that rotation kind of, you know, got disrupted there. One less guy to play. And you just saw Jacksonville run up some numbers that I don't think were real. I don't think the defense struggled as mightily against Jacksonville. Just all of a sudden, like, they made Mac Jones look amazing.
Well, the whole game, the pass rush was basically inept. There was no pressure on Mac Jones, and that's why that in the end is why he looked good. And we talked at the beginning of the season about how important the pass rush is. We've seen it be that important. And outside of a fumble that where he dropped the snap, you can't call that a sack because they didn't establish if it was a pass play or not. There was Mac Jones had his way. And he didn't do well early on, but then he eventually, after having enough time, figured it out. So, I mean, if Aziz Alshire is suspended, I think it'd be really interesting to see if Christian Harris maybe comes back week 15. He's been rumored to be on track to come back week 15, but we'll see. It'd be a great time. Thanks for joining us here on the Bullpen. I know we're coming out on a Tuesday. That's because it's a bye week. And we were really tired. You know, I was decorating the Christmas tree with the family. Tom was, you know, getting ready to go back to work after a long break. You know, we were taking time to get ready for the holiday season, guys. So, yeah. But, thanks for tuning in. And we're going to be testing out some audio-only episodes. I figured out how to record phone calls. So, please let us know if the audio quality is unbearable. I'm going to try and do my best with it, but, you know, I'm not a miracle worker. I'm just some guy who has Final Cut Pro on his MacBook. So we'll see what happens. But be on the lookout for those. That way maybe we can fill your bye week with some Texans talk. I have been James Roy. You can find me at James Roy NFL. That is it. That is the whole thing. I changed my Instagram username to at James Roy NFL. So you can now – that is me. So now, Tom, why do you have so many different usernames for everything? My goodness. No. Tom is
at Third Coast Tom spelled out was taken on Instagram. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. James Roy is very unique. Third Coast Tom is not.
You have such a really good username. Third Coast Tom is like, I think he has a really good handle.
I tried to get it on Instagram. The best I could do was TC Tom 1.
TC Tom 1, which is Third Coast Tom with a 1 after it. On Instagram, and then Third Coast Tom on Twitter. And we're the Bullpen. You can find it at the Bullpen Cast on Instagram. You can find it on Twitter. You won't see much. I just really have not had time to post anything on that. But by all means, drop a follow so that you can say you follow the Bullpen. As always, stay classy, Houston, and vamos Texans.
Thanks for tuning in to The Bullpen, a Texans podcast. Please like, comment, subscribe, and follow along for more Texans talk from The Bullpen.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.